It's Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. Oxygen is overrated. Just keep running. That motto welcomes you to the website of high altitude runner Matt Carpenter. Carpenter lives in Manitou Springs, and he runs marathons at altitudes that would leave most people short of breath just standing still. He holds dozens of titles from long distance high altitude competitions. These are races in breathtaking locales, ranging from Pikes Peak in his own backyard to the Tibetan Himalayas. And at 44 years old, Carpenter's breaking records while competing against much younger runners. Physiologically, he has an advantage. His body is able to process oxygen more efficiently than most other athletes, including Lance Armstrong. Matt Carpenter is preparing for a busy running season starting in May with a race in Vail. And he joined us by phone. Matt, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me briefly about learning that your body processes oxygen, differently than most other mortals.
Well, I don't know about the mortals, but, it came about in a test. They gave me a nice number, and it's a pretty awesome number to have if you're going to be running in altitude. But I kind of always had a hint of it. For a long time, even when I was moving around in different apartments, I'd try holding my breath to break the record at different apartments and see how long I could go underwater, and always knew I had a pretty good oxygen uptake.
Different apartments?
Yeah, we moved around a lot. My mom, she had a lupus, and so we didn't stay in one place very long, and everywhere we went there was a swimming pool, and it seems like every pool had a record for most laps underwater, and I'd try to break them.
I see. So you can just hold on to oxygen longer.
Yeah, that's part of it. I extract more out of the air.
Okay. Well, for runners who come from sea level, just running in Denver could be considered high altitude. So what is your definition of high altitude?
For me, I put the number at about 10,000 feet. Above 10,000 feet, if you don't have some training there, you're definitely going to run into some problems.
Like what?
Well, first thing that happens, Ryan, is you get your fingernails will start to turn blue. Your lips might even get a little blue. The term is hypoxic. You just basically aren't getting enough oxygen. It's hard to think. You might get tingling in your fingers.
Early on, did any of those things happen to you, the bluing or?
It still does. If I go up to 14,000 feet real quick without a lot of training, there'll be a time where I'm definitely hypoxic.
Hmm. What is the highest you've run?
I've run at 17,060 feet. We did a whole marathon at that elevation.
Is that Tibet?
Yep, exactly.
Oh, and what do you remember about the first time you tried that? Or the only time? Or I don't know.
No, we only had one race at that altitude. What was really amazing to me is even though it looked flat, the slightest uphill would just put you into oxygen debt, and your pace would just vary so much. I mean, you have to remember that's another 9% off your VO2 from even being on top of Pikes Peak, for example.
VO2, that's the level that you were actually talking about at the beginning of the interview, right?
Exactly. For every 1,000 feet you go above 5,000 feet, you lose 3%.
And what is VO2 exactly?
Body's ability to deliver oxygen to the muscles.
Got it. Tell me why you run in the mountains in the first place. What's the driver?
For me, it's such a concrete goal. I mean, most races, be it Boston or even your local 10K, you go around one block and then another to some arbitrary block and some line on the road. With mountain running, I love it because almost everyone, you can look up and see your goal and know that's where you're going to end up and probably come back down too if the race is up and down. So I like the concrete nature of it. It's actually a tackling nature.
And when you run at a normal altitude, is it hard for you? In other words, if you're trained to be a high altitude runner, is there a challenge in low altitude?
Exactly. It works two ways. And breathing wise, I just feel like I could take one breath and run a mile almost. It's an awesome feeling. But on the legs, because the intensity is so much higher and you're going so much faster, your legs tend to get really beat up. So you have to work on both of those issues. If you're going to live at altitude and go down low, you need to do some really fast stuff here to get yourself ready for down there. And if you're down there, you need to work on stuff that's going to work on your oxygen uptake.
Now, when you're saying that it's hard on your legs to run at lower altitudes, that's because your body is so much more equipped, it can drive itself into the ground in some ways.
Exactly. You get so much air that you can just outperform your body. And I liken it to like weights, for example. If you were to, you can do a couple of reps on the machine and then add some more weight, you're not going to breathe much harder, but your muscles will be fatigued. And that's what basically happens when I go to sea level and run down there.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and high-altitude runner Matt Carpenter is with us. He's speaking to us from his home in Manitou Springs. In 2002, when your daughter was born, you ended a streak of consecutive days of running that I think had totaled 5 years and 57 days. Am I right about that?
Yep, that sounds about right.
Okay.
I run every day, try to get in the time, and yeah, I just feel the way to be a good runner is be consistent at it.
And after 20 years of being at the top of the sport, you didn't win or even race as much, really.
You know, as any parent knows, you just go through some adjustment, and you know, your priorities change for a while. Yeah, I still remember that first night with her, and she was crying, and we're like, what's wrong? What do we do? How do we put her back? And, you know, there's just so many new things that go on, and so I stepped back from the running for a while, and you have to develop new patterns and get into a lifestyle, and then it comes back.
Do you lose it quickly?
You know, it's like anything. If you don't keep at it, you definitely lose the edge. And I started losing races, and there came that point where I had to actually ask myself if I was going to continue that way or start doing it right again.
And you went with the latter decision.
Exactly. You know, what spurred me on is I'd always wanted to do a 100-mile race. Everybody had always told me if you don't run 100 miles, you don't know who you are. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to die and not know who I am. So jumped in a 100-miler.
And, well, let's talk about that. The Leadville 100, right?
Exactly. Race across the sky.
Race across the sky. Almost literally. I mean, it takes runners 50 miles out into the Rockies, back again at altitudes ranging from 9,200 feet to 12,600. And although you've run marathons at high altitude many times, you had a tough first time running that race.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly. The introduction there, it was pretty fun for about 70 miles. I was going faster than anybody else, but after that, I had to walk the last 30 miles in. There was a point where I was thinking I should call March of Dimes and, you know, and tell them I got a walkathon going, because I was definitely doing the 10 man. I couldn't even bend my legs.
There was just so much pain.
Exactly. You know, it was something new that I hadn't quite trained properly for. I did a 50-mile race in Lake City as a tune-up, and that just went awesome. But I hadn't recovered from that, and I didn't realize how long it would take to recover from the 50-miler. So I went into the 100-miler a little bit beat up.
You made it to the finish line, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had about a list of 10 goals, and I was down to the last one, basically, which was to finish. I don't believe in quitting, and in fact, I think it was the pain of actually finishing that helped me focus the whole next year, because I didn't want to go through that again.
Now, that was in 2004. Am I right?
Yep.
About that? And then in 2005, you went back.
I went back with a vengeance.
And what happened?
Well, we took out the record by 93 minutes and never even had a bad patch. It was just awesome.
Well, I would call that an easy victory. Well, not easy, but certainly a victory.
Yeah, it for me, it was important just because, you know, I'd set a goal. And you know, if you reach all your goals the first time around, maybe you're not setting them high enough. So I definitely had a hard goal, and it took two attempts, but we got it right.
Now, you have won 9 marathons and 6 ascents of Pikes Peak, and you've even won them both on back-to-back days.
Yep, that's called the double. That's a strange thing that started in 1981 when they started having the races on different days, and you know, it's grown pretty big now. Last year, like 28% of the field is signed up for the double.
And of course, Pikes Peak is in your backyard.
Yep, I definitely have the home court advantage. I know every stick and stone and every turn, and that really pays off, because it's a really technical course, not just as a matter of rocks, but there's just so many different facets to it. There's flat sections and steep sections and the rocky sections, and then you get above tree line and you have the altitude issues and then the wind and the weather. Last year we had so much snow that like 700 people got turned around.
My gosh. I have to think that there's something, I don't know, I don't want to elevate this beyond what you might, but spiritual about running in a place that you have a connection to that way?
I mean, it definitely makes me feel connected and a little, you know, a little bit back to nature, back to the roots type of thing. You know, there was a long time there after my mom passed away, I'd run to the top and kind of look up in the sky and tell my mom I was doing fine. But, you know, like, I wouldn't take it much farther than that. It's just something I really enjoy and something that I think is a part of me.
And you co-founded a race on Pikes Peak. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, back in 2000, we started a race called the Bar Trail Mountain Race. It runs halfway up and back, but its primary objective is to raise money for other organizations like El Paso County Search and Rescue. I mean, these guys are all volunteers, and when they save our butts, it costs them an arm and a leg. So we give half our entry fees to them, and then we give the other half to Friends of the Peak, which builds the trails on Pikes Peak, so that benefits us all. And then we raise another $6,000 every year for high school running programs because, you know, school funding is just really low, and some of these schools get next to nothing. So this enables them to buy uniforms and all kinds of neat things.
So what are you training for now, Matt? What's next on the schedule?
In June, I have hopefully the Teva Mountain Games up in Vail. I've done that one a number of times. And in July, I'll hit the Bar Trail Mountain Race. August will be Pikes Peak Marathon. And then out in December in San Francisco is a 50-miler called the North Face Endurance Challenge.
How long do you imagine you'll continue to run?
Ooh, you know, I hope I'm running to the end. I have a club that I also co-founded, and we got guys over 70 years old still doing it, and it just impresses the heck out of me. And if I can keep that up, you know, I'd like to go to the end. I don't know how long I can keep it up at this level, but you know, Father Time catches us all.
Well, Matt, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, very glad to be with you, and thanks for having me.
High-altitude trail runner Matt Carpenter lives in Manitou Springs.